Jake eased open the closet. There was a room safe inside. He tried 1919 and nothing happened. He paused to let the safe mechanism reset itself, wiped sweat from his forehead with both hands, they were shaking, and tried again. This time he punched 1999, and the safe swung open. Black 13's droning song and the contrapuntal jangle of the toe dash chimes both increased. The sounds were like chilly fingers prying around in their heads. "And it can send you places," Callahan thought. "All you have to do is let down your guard a little bit. Open the bag, open the box, and then, oh, the places you'll go. Pop goes the weasel." True, though, he knew this to be, part of him wanted to open the box, lusted to. Nor was he the only one. As he watched, Jake knelt before the safe like a worshipper at an altar. Callahan reached to stop him from lifting the bag out with an arm that seemed incredibly heavy. "It doesn't matter if you do or don't," a voice whispered in his mind. It was sleep-inducing, that voice, and incredibly persuasive. Nonetheless, Callahan kept reaching. He grasped Jake's collar with fingers from which all feeling seemed to have departed. "No," he said, "don't." His voice sounded draggy, dispirited, depressed. When he pulled Jake to one side, the boy seemed to go as if in slow motion or underwater. The room now seemed lit by the sick yellow light that sometimes falls over a landscape before a ruinous storm. As Callahan fell onto his own knees before the open safe, he seemed to descend through the air for at least a full minute before touching down. He heard the voice of Black 13 louder than ever. It was telling him to kill the boy, to open the boy's throat and give the ball a refreshing drink of his warm life's blood. Then Callahan himself would be allowed to leap from the room's window. "All the way down to 46th Street, you will praise me," Black 13 assured him in a voice both sane and lucid. "Do it," Jake sighed. "Oh, yes, do it. Who gives a damn?" "Ache," Oi barked from the doorway. "Ache." They both ignored him. As Callahan reached for the bag, he found himself remembering his final encounter with Barlow, the king vampire, the type one in Callahan's own parlance, who had come to the little town of Salem's Lot. Found himself remembering how he'd confronted Barlow in Mark Petrie's house with Mark's parents lying lifeless on the floor at the vampire's feet, their skulls crushed and their oh-so-rational brains turned to jelly. "While you fall, I'll let you whisper the name of my king," Black 13 whispered. "The Crimson King." As Callahan watched his hands grasp the bag, whatever had been there before, nothing but strikes at Midworld Lanes was now printed on the side. He thought of how his crucifix had first glared with some otherworldly light driving Barlow back, and then had begun to darken again. "Open it," Jake said eagerly. "Open it, I want to see it." Oi was barking steadily now. Down the hall, someone yelled, "Shut that dog up!" and was likewise ignored. Callahan slipped the ghostwood box from the bag, the box that had spent such a blessedly quiet time hidden beneath the pulpit of his church in Colubrin Sturgis. Now he would open it. Now he would observe Black 13 in all its repellent glory, and then die. Gratefully. 10. "Sad to see a man's faith fail," the vampire Kurt Barlow had said. And then he'd plucked Don Callahan's dark and useless cross from his hand. Why had he been able to do that? Because, behold the paradox, consider the riddle, Father Callahan had failed to throw the cross away himself. Because he had failed to accept that the cross was nothing but one symbol of a far greater power, one that ran like a river beneath the universe, perhaps beneath a thousand universes. "I need no symbol," Callahan thought, and then, "Is that why God let me live? Was he giving me a second chance to learn that?" It was possible, he thought, as his hands settled on the lid of the box. Second chances were one of God's specialties.